Well, and there is, you bring up in this book the way that this other form of mirroring and kind of inverse relationship, where once some issue became important to the far right, like the minimal but real cases of adverse effects from the COVID vaccine, right, for example, the left had a way of automatically dismissing, in some cases, even just the inquiry about it. And there were all of these ways that you write about that the kind of tortured balancing relationship between the left and the right. Like, you had for so long urged your readers to be suspicious of moments of crisis being taken advantage of by those in power. And many on the far right during COVID began to understand COVID as exactly that, but just with things that weren't true, such as the fact that the government was tracking us all with microparticles. And
it wasn't JFK who was shot in Dallas. It was Bing Crosby.
I can't be toiled as a gateway to the dream.
It's the Greys. They're behind the plan to make us marry our toaster.
Brian Foster's Vince muscle. It's in a jar at the White House with Hillary's car.
The glint seat and put electricity in my toothpaste.
Someone on the Supreme Court's a woman, and it's not the one you think.
Angels on asteroids are abducting crop circles.
It's not coming to an end. Cause it never began.
It's 11:05:30. High time for a bright light to pierce the conspiratorial darkness. No, I'm not afraid to talk about it, so don't come up on me. I'm Harold Hiphugger with Night Whispers.
Good evening. I'm here beneath the biggest party of the millennium under the stands at Homeless Stadium. And it's time for Fun Fun Town's most controversial radio broadcast. And my only guest tonight, well, I suppose I'm actually his guest, General Y2K, commander of the
Present.
Last Minute Men. Y2K, that's not your real name, is it, Mildew?
These are the last minutes of the last hours of the last century, Hiphugger. The countdown for liberty has begun, and before the nameless faces of the New World Order can pull the switch, I'm pulling it.
Well, that's fascinating, General.
I was napping poolside at the Gulf War Swimdrome when the government put a chip in my ass, and I'm not going to take it sitting down. It's high noon, daylight slavery time, and as of now, you take your orders from us. And that means me.
You know, vaccine passports, you know, likening vaccine passports to yellow stars in Europe. Mm-hmm. And then as you write during COVID, and you write that you yourself had begun to worry that those of us on the left had, in fact, been too complacent about what did happen during COVID, which was consolidation of power to the wealthy and corporate profiteering and billionaires doubling their fortunes and, you know, vaccine apartheid, that there were kind of real, I don't want to say conspiracies, but there were real examples of profiteering and power concentration that had somehow fallen by the wayside.
Well, yes. And what worried me was hearing Steve Bannon take issues that I knew to be very powerful, traditionally left-wing issues that had been kind of left unattended, that had been, that were not being deployed as much, where it was sort of like, we all just need to kind of line, like if they are anti-vax and anti-mask, then we just need to be the people saying, get vaccinated and wear your mask and not make too big a deal about all the other things that our governments could have done, lift the patents on those vaccines, like make sure that every classroom had proper air filters, that classrooms were smaller, that we had more teachers, that we had more nurses, that they had PPE, you know, bans on pandemic profiteering. And we were not ambitious in calling that out.
Well, I took the infernal device with me when I was assigned to Pearl, where I look forward to some serious surfing. But the only other Joes on the channel were Tojos. I learned to my horror that the Japanese military was issuing sake-powered laptops to every soldier under the rising sun. I'll never forget that Sunday morning in September. Pearl was asleep. We'd had quite a night. When I woke up, I was already logged on. And I accidentally intercepted an East... And I accidentally intercepted an East mail from Hirohito at kamikaze.com. It read Tenjo Typhoon. I ran it through my Japanese spell checker and didn't like what I saw. It translated, "Fly boys, be ambitious." I knew then that they were going to flame us.
You know, obviously there are exceptions, but I believe we dangerously ceded political territory. So when I would hear Bannon, you know, doing like cosplaying Chomsky or, you know, my own politics, it's not that I think he believes it. It's that he is a strategist and his political move that he has used to great effect is looking at the people and the issues that the Democratic Party has abandoned, who feel betrayed, who feel unrepresented. You know, he identified that this was fertile political territory to bring a portion of the traditional Democratic base over to the MAGA right. And now he is doing the same things. You know, it used to be like the kind of forgotten everyman. Now it's the angry every mom. And that is right. Who my doppelganger represents to him, right?
Right.
Is sort of frazzled COVID moms who are feel like mocked right. and dismissed. And he's saying, come on over. And then, you know, moving very quickly from masks and vaccines to critical race theory and
right. Transphobia.
So, you know, we can get angry about that. But the parts of this agenda that come from the left and the center left that were not being used effectively, that where we had become too timid, too silent, too afraid of seeming like them, right?
Right.
That is something we can do about. There are ways that we can take those issues back, but we have to get over this fear of sounding too much like Bannon, because he sounds like we're worried about that because he's sounding more like us and he doesn't really mean it. They're doing it because it works politically and it's a route to power.
There's this other thread running through the book that I loved. You write about Daisy Hilliard's formulation of the shadow self, mm-hmm. that you and I are sitting here talking. Well, kind of. There are little pictures of us are sitting on the screen talking to each other, but we're talking. But there are other versions of ourselves that are, as she writes, in the sky causing storms and in the ocean nudging whales towards the beach, right? That as we, who are Western consumers, you know, have these lives, that there are shadow versions of ourselves, there are doppelgangers of ourselves in rare earth mines, you know, alongside 14-year-old laborers who are being poisoned, right? That life asks us, the narrative of success and a good life and even just everyday mental functioning perhaps asks people to suppress the reality of those shadow selves and those doppelgangers. But they are with us and they're sort of growing. Our sense of them is becoming unavoidable, that because of the reality of climate change, because of the reality of, you know, all of these accelerating systems, they're not going to be shadow selves for long. We are going to have to confront the flip side of the economic systems that fuel our lives.
A shadow moves upon a land. For I remember stopping by the way to watch a potter thumping his wet clay, and with its all obliterated tongue it murmured, "Gently, brother, gently pray." A dreadfully fatal intermittent fever broke out in the lower parts of this river about 11 weeks ago. In the month of August, the intermittent fever began to shake its burning, freezing subjects.
Prior to the year 1830, when the ague and fever was not known to exist,
the epidemic ague, which has swept away great numbers of the natives, commenced in 1830,
was not known to exist.
The main disorder is an intermittent fever which has carried off all or nearly all the Indians. Since the year 1829, probably 7/8 have been swept away by disease, principally by fever and ague.
The fever and ague was not known in this country before the year 1829.
Prior to the year 1830, when the ague and fever was not known to exist.
Was never known in this country before the year 1829.
Was not known to exist.
In 1829, attacked by fever, attended with ague.
The intermittent fever has appeared at this place.
There are a great many Indians here at present. Some few of them have the ague.
On the Sacramento River, we are informed by the Indians that they have no traditions of any similar scourge in past time.
There appears to be some sickness prevailing among them resembling an ague.
When the ague and fever was not known to exist.
We are informed by the Indians that they have no traditions of any similar scourge in past time.
The fever and ague was not known in this country before the year 1829.
No traditions of any similar scourge in past
was
time.
Was not known to exist.
They have no traditions of any similar scourge.
Was not known to exist.
Never known in this country.
Was not known to exist.
No traditions.
Since 1829, an intermittent fever has carried off vast numbers of the Indians.
The symptoms are a general coldness, soreness, and stiffness of the limbs and body with violent tertian ague. Its fatal termination is attributable to its tendency to attack the liver.
The Indians of the Columbia were once a numerous and powerful people. The shore of the river for scores of miles was lined with their villages.
Upwards of 100 individuals were writhing in agony on the floors of the houses.
I have found the Indian population in the lower country below the falls of the Columbia far less than I had expected. Since the year 1829, probably 7/8 have been swept away by disease. So many and so sudden were the deaths which occurred that the shores were strewn with the unburied dead.
Whole and large villages were depopulated and some entire tribes have disappeared.
The intermittent fever has appeared at this place and carried off 3/4 of the Indian population.
The Multnomah Indians have become as a tribe extinct. The Multnomah Indians have become as a tribe extinct. As a tribe extinct.
And I think, well, I think it is the work of our lives to try to look. So it isn't just that it's hard to look at things that are hard.
Right.
It's also that we are implicated in those hard things, right? We are not apart from them. And that's what she, I think, articulates really beautifully with this idea that we have two bodies, the body that is sitting here in this chair, you know, the body that is going to go for a walk with my dog later and my kid. And then there's the body that is hovering over, whose tax dollars fund drone warfare, who is implicated in oil wars, who is implicated in plastic in the ocean and all of that. Like, that is not other people. That is me. That is us. And that is the hardest thing to look at, right? Like, we're implicated in those storms that are hitting us. We're implicated in the histories that's coming at us. And we're implicated in the exploitation of those workers, in the clothes that we wear. And, oh my God, that's hard. Like, is it any wonder that people are finding ways to look away? And the argument I make about conspiracy culture and what's going on with my doppelganger and Steve Bannon is they are creating these fake scandals that are actually an amazing way to not look at the real scandals. But I guess the flip side of that, and because, you know, a doppelganger book, you know, I dove deep into doppelganger novels and short stories and films. And I think I can say with certainty that pretty much all the storylines start with you thinking you're confronting your doppelganger and ending up confronting yourself.
Right.
So I would just say to those of us who might feel a little bit smug about, oh, those ridiculous people who are choosing to take a flight into fantasy conspiracy theories instead of doing the hard work of looking at reality. I mean, I went to Barbie, did you? You know?
Right.
I mean, there are different ways of fleeing from reality.
The introduction for A Candy You Did with Salon describes Naomi Wolf as a one-time feminist crusader and now, bafflingly, an adjunct member of far-right conspiracy culture. One thing that I'm always personally trying to work out, when it comes to conspiracy theories, is how people who believe in them ended up believing in them. What radicalized them? Where's the connective tissue? So I was immediately wondering about that word bafflingly. Is it baffling? Or did you begin to see a clearer line between Wolf's earlier beliefs and later beliefs as you researched for doppelganger? I find her belief in, and spreading of, conspiracy culture, and I call it conspiracy culture more than conspiracy theory, because there's barely a theory there, it contradicts itself, and really it goes wherever heat is. I find that less baffling than the political alliances she's made, given her earlier work. I think it's probably more shocking that somebody who was such a prominent feminist and wrote against gun violence, wrote a whole book on fascism, wrote about reproductive rights, is now minimizing the Supreme Court's attacks on reproductive freedom and abortion access. She is hanging around with people who are fascists, and who have a fascist project.
My fellow Americans, This morning at 6:25 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, combined elements of the Imperial Japanese Navy and our forces ruthlessly attacked our naval base at Pearl Harbor in the Hawaiian Islands. I have conferred this morning with the Congress and the Chiefs of Staff in emergency session. We have reached our rendezvous with destiny. It is our unanimous and irrevocable decision that the United States of America unconditionally surrender.
In a way, that is the more important shift to understand. Because other people like her are shifting alliances in this way, and they're moving to a very dangerous political project. I think we need to understand how that's being rationalized. In terms of what you asked about, were there clues in her earlier work? Some people have speculated about it. Some people have said, oh, she was always a conspiracy theorist, you know, the beauty myth was a conspiracy theory. But I don't think so. It's a very easy smear to make against any kind of anti-establishment systemic analysis. I think what's more telling is that she was sloppy with facts in that book. And what's more telling is that she kind of got addicted to the internet, the reward system in it. I think that those are the factors that signaled that this might be possible more than saying there was a conspiratorial tone to her earlier work. You write about how Wolf's COVID conspiracies sound a little like what you wrote about in The Shock Doctrine, but refracted through a funhouse mirror of plots and conspiracies based almost exclusively on a series of hunches. I was thinking about something similar when Donald Trump and his acolytes began railing about mainstream media during his presidential campaign. In particular, I guess, reflecting on the way books like Manufacturing Consent influenced the development of my own skepticism and approach to media analysis. Because there are very legitimate reasons to be skeptical of power and authority and mainstream institutions. But is there a different exigency in our current conspiracy-filled era to express that skepticism differently or more carefully, so that legitimate critiques don't end up being distorted and weaponized? I do think that our moment calls for greater attention to rigor, and I think we need to educate people, particularly young people, on the difference between a systemic analysis of power and an unfounded conspiracy.
In addressing for the assembly this morning, thank you. I am recalling the words of the founder of Morse Science High School, Yucaipa Heap, who pressed the first bricks with his own hands. Knowledge for the people, he said. Give them a light, and they'll follow it anywhere. We think that is a fair and a wise guy for rule to be guided by.
What is reality?
And we're not afraid of it, are we?
Eat it!
You bet.
Eat it raw!
Raw, raw, raw. That's the spirits we have here. Okay. So come on, kids. Line up, sign up, and re-enlist today. Because we need more schooling for more students, for more science high. Thank you.
And real conspiracy, right? Because we have become so reactive that we're suddenly acting as if there has never been a plot by wealthy people and governments to advance their own interests. That is just not true. As part of our ongoing media education, we have to make a distinction between honest efforts to expose the real conspiracies that have always been a part of capitalism, from price fixing to cover-ups to the long history of intelligence agencies being involved in dirty tricks and covert ops, mostly against revolutionaries at home, indigenous resistance movements, black liberation movements, and socialist governments abroad. We need to distinguish between that and dishonest conspiracy fabulists and influencers.